This is Fresh Air. Wu Ningquan was born in Yangzhou, China. He came to the States in the 40s to go to college and graduate school. In 1951, soon after the Communist Revolution in China, he received an invitation to return to his country to teach English and American literature. He eagerly took the offer, hoping that the new government would modernize the country and improve the lives of its people. He found when he returned that the old feudal system had been abolished, and some of the outward signs of poverty and corruption were gone. But soon communists began rooting out anyone who disagreed or differed with their ideology. Wu was denounced as a counter-revolutionary, and over the next 30 years was sent to several prison and labor camps. He's written a memoir about how he and his family survived these experiences entitled A Single Tear. In the mid-50s, a campaign for thought reform came to the campus where Wu was teaching. I asked him if he was scared.
A little, not too much, because they did everything with a certain restraint. They singled out the leaders of the university and the professors, which they considered reactionary, but just made the rest make a public confession.
What did you confess?
Oh, I confess I wasted all my good years studying bourgeois literature abroad, why the Chinese people were fighting for liberation and the leadership of the Communist Party. And I had also served with the nationalists.
Did you think you were in danger?
No, I did not think I was in danger at the time. I suppose I did not feel I was guilty of anything. And I was a recent returnee. I suppose unconsciously, I expected them to show some kind of leniency towards me.
Now, you were taken to a correction center, the Beijing Municipal Detention Center for Corrective Education through Labor, and this was in April of 1958. Leading up to that, were the condemnations that you had to withstand, were they getting worse and worse? Did you really feel, before you were taken to the center, that you were in deep trouble?
Oh, yes. I was already condemned as an ultra-rightist. I was dishonored but discharged and was condemned to thought reform through hard labor.
Now, you were taken to the Beijing Municipal Detention Center. Mm. Describe what that center was like.
This center is a sort of staging area. From there, we were sent to separate thought reform camps.
Well, you were sent to a labor reform camp and you worked from sunrise to sunset. Now, what were the conditions like at this camp?
It's not so bad, I would say. It's not so bad. We had enough to eat, and the working hours are long, but there was no beating or even verbal abuse.
How did you keep your sanity?
Well, that's a good question. Perhaps because, for one thing, since my mother had killed herself when I was a small boy, I unconsciously decided not to follow in her footsteps. I had a kind of immunity in that sense. But then I had time to think and to reflect on life and on the human values of life. So I thought I would hold on to the human values while undergoing the punishment.
Well, I want to talk more about that, but first I want to take a very short break. And my guest on Fresh Air is Wu Ningquan, and we're talking about a book he's written called A Single Tear. It's a memoir about his life in China under the communist regime. He returned to China in 1951 after being educated in the States. He was denounced and imprisoned, and we're talking about his experiences there. We're going to take a very short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Wu Ningquan. Now, just to kind of complete the story before we get to the Cultural Revolution, after this labor reform camp, you were moved even to another one, which you described as a castle-like monstrosity. And it was really at this camp that you said you felt you lived the life of a socialist prisoner. How was this worse than the other places you were sent to?
Because the so-called discipline was much more strict, and none of the officers ever showed us a smile, and we were not allowed of the castle unless accompanied by the guards, and there was so little food.
Were you nearly starved to death?
Yes. I was. It was the worst time in China too.
Did you think that this was going to be the way your life was going to be, that you were going to spend the rest of your life in labor camps?
I never lost hope, strangely. I thought sooner or later I would be laid out. There would be an end to it. Oh, the worst part of my experience during that period was you never knew when this would come to an end. Because they have that unbeatable logic that say, well, when you are thoroughly reformed, you would be released. And when you are released, that's an indication that you have been thoroughly reformed.
And yet you never knew what...
You never know. So.
But how were you able to keep your hope up? What kept that alive?
I suppose because of my family ties, my wife's unwavering love and support. And my love of life, my love of man, and my love of freedom. I thought, I have to live for this. They can kill me, but I will never kill myself.
Well, you were finally let out of this prison. Did you then say to yourself, well, I must have been reformed?
No. I knew I wasn't reformed. Of course, I kept telling them that I was reformed, yeah. and they also believed it, well, maybe with a grain of salt. But that was the way life was conducted in China.
You write that in 1965, you felt a, quote, ominous cloud gathering on the cultural scene, and this is really a description of the coming cultural revolution. How did you feel things changing in China?
And at the time, of course, I was afraid. But on the other hand, I wasn't too afraid because I knew I had not committed any new crimes. And the new campaign, it seems, was targeted at other people. I was already down and out. In China, I was classified as a dead tiger.
Meaning you paid the price, you were inconsequential?
That's right, uh-huh. But then, of course, when the campaign did come, they said, well, the dead tiger is not quite dead.
Well, that's when you were called a cow demon.
Yes, uh-huh.
What did that mean?
That means we were the enemies of the people.
How then did re-education programs under the Cultural Revolution, how did that affect you and your life?
Well, I was sent to the countryside at the end. Of course, not much thought reform was ever attempted during the Cultural Revolution. It was all punishment. When I was sent to the countryside, I did get some re-education through living among the peasants because I had... although I had lived among petty criminals at the labor camp, but not the genuine peasants of China. So I got a new feeling for the peasants, for China. And I came to love China even more. Mm.
So the Cultural Revolution for you was not as dangerous then as the times preceding it when you were imprisoned.
That's right. Yes, in a way, it wasn't quite. Although we had been sent to the countryside, and there was talks about never letting us go back to the city or universities again. That's one of the Red Guards told me. He said, "Well, I don't think you or your wife Li Kai could ever come back to university again." So, but look after yourself and bring up the children. I said, well, I don't feel that pessimistic.
So the life for you then, as the Cultural Revolution ended and you stayed in China, you were able to live a quote-unquote normal life?
Yes. Yeah, fairly normal.
Were you able to predict the Tiananmen Square uprising? Were you surprised by that at all?
Not altogether, because I was in hospital at the time, so I had telephone conversations with some of my good friends, and towards mid-May, I said, "Uh-oh, it looks like a repeat of the anti-rightist campaign." So my friend, who was also an ex-rightist, he said, "Oh no, this can't be." Because, you know, the euphoria was so high in Beijing. And when Tiananmen happened, so he called me again. He said, damn it, you're right.
But dissidents have still been prosecuted. The government is still in control. What has changed, you think, about China?
Well, look at economic reform, which is changing the ways of life in China. And even the dissidents... The major dissidents are now in the United States and in Paris. The government has done things differently. But before, people like the dissidents were never allowed to leave the country. But now they encourage them to leave the country.
Do you think that the work of the dissidents and the speaking that they've done, does that information get back into China through faxes and satellite dishes and all the...
No, I think through secret channels.
Are you still able to go back and forth to China?
I don't know. Because I don't know whether the book will make any difference. But I don't think it will make too much difference. This is... I've said nothing... Really, nothing very strong against the present regime. This is a historical work.
But you obviously have some concerns about whether the book will prevent you from going back.
I'm not in the habit of worrying about tomorrow. I read the Bible.
Your writings were banned for a while in China?
My translations. I did not write too many things. My translations were banned after I was denounced as a rightist.
So are you going to try to go back to China?
Yeah. Yes, I belong to China.
So you'll know, I guess, when you try to make that trip back to China, whether your book has made a difference or not?
Yes. Yes, I'll wait and see. At least I don't have time to worry about tomorrow now.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us on Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Wu Ningquan's memoir is called A Single Tear. This is Fresh Air.